Coming up on Over a Barrel, Israel retaliates against Iran, sending crude oil prices jolting, but it only seemed to be temporary. We've got the entire breakdown on where things are headed with Over a Barrel, starting right now. Welcome to Over a Barrel. I'm Matt McClain alongside Patrick DeHaan. And make sure that you like or subscribe to our podcast, Over a Barrel, on your favorite type of, you know, delivery content, YouTube, Spotify, whatnot, Apple. And make sure that you really kind of check us out and maybe listen to a few past episodes as well. Plus, you can even ask us some questions along those particular lines as well. And I know, Patrick, you've got those ways to be able to get a hold of us.
Well, first, good to be back with you again, Matt. Absolutely. If you want to shoot us an email, podcast@gasbuddy.com, or you can reach out to us. I'm GasBuddyGuy on X, and you're Over a Barrel Matt on X. The show you can find on X as well, Over a Barrel Show. You can also find the show on Facebook. Over a Barrel Show is our address there. Boy, now that we've gotten through that, I think we also did have a question to start the week, didn't we?
We did. Actually, you know, we do get questions, and a lot of the times we are going to, like, you know, start bringing those to the forefront, basically. And we'll use first names only. This one is from Phyllis. And Phyllis is wondering, Patrick, if you would ask, find out about the average that people will have a choice for fuel in the future besides battery electric vehicles, or will people be forced to battery electric only? That's a question from Phyllis, and it's actually a fairly good question.
Yeah. So will the average, repeating the question I think I heard, the average person, will they have a choice for fuel besides battery electric, or will they be forced? I can't think. The government usually will incentivize or steer people away. There have been some states that have suggested that they're going to ban internal combustion engine vehicles, but I think the trend pretty obviously has been states that have banned internal combustion engine vehicles have been kind of loosening up on the dates of that. So, you know, I think the government's job, they're going to start concentrating more on trying to incentivize people to electric vehicles. I don't know that they're going to follow up on those bans simply because the government loves banning things, or at least I should say, you know, politicians like banning things. But in my future, I just don't know if that's ever going to work. So that's my opinion. I don't know. There could be a lot of, you know, states that do their own thing. It's going to be hard to predict. I don't think that we'll see a federal mandate that internal combustion engine vehicles are banned from the roads in my lifetime, maybe when I'm 80 or something, but not anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, that's the case. You and I have talked about different aspects, even with regard to service, convenience stores and gasoline, you know, Buc-ee's, we've mentioned them more than once in some other aspects. A lot of, even new gas stations are going up across the country. One would think that if that were down the turnpike, you know, in 5 or 10 years, that they probably wouldn't be moving in that direction for their personal businesses.
Yeah.
You know, that's just one aspect. The other aspect would be, you know, it's really tough. As you and I have talked about with electric vehicles, there are certain portions of this country where that's just simply not going to work, no matter how you try it, just simply because of the geographic location of where things are, how far apart everything happens to be. It's not like you can plug an electric vehicle into a tree. It's got to be something that makes logical sense. And for good stretches of the United States,
right,
you know, it's not a feasible situation at this time, just where the technology happens to be. So that's something to, you know, kind of keep in mind. Plus the electric grid, the power grid. You know, if everybody swaps over to, you know, electric vehicles, then we've got a problem with electricity at that point.
Well, to your point also, you know, think about at that time, what's going to be antique vehicles, right? Cars that are still being produced today, you may be forced in the future or incentivized, Phyllis, to buy an electric vehicle of some magnitude. I don't know if that's going to be a plug-in hybrid electric or what, but you know, there's still going to be a lot of vehicles, especially that people keep as antiques, that are still going to need gasoline. So, you know, in my lifetime, I do not expect gas stations to disappear at all. In fact, it's going to be more of an evolution where, you know, this isn't going to be like the 80s and 90s, Matt, where you see abandoned gas stations. That real estate is tremendously valuable, and stations are going to pivot. They're going to sell whatever you need, whether that's gasoline, whether that's LNG, whether that's electricity. You know, convenience stores, that's the focus, right? A lot of these people, and myself included, sometimes think about, you know, gas stations. But gas stations are really convenience stores that just sell gasoline, and they're going to sell electricity and charge your EV if that's what you have too. So great question from Phyllis. You know, I feel like there's a lot of folks out there that are a little nervous about what the future looks like. And, you know, are you going to be forced to buy an EV? I really can't foresee that. But, you know, the government may do that. So great question from Phyllis. If you have a question, again, shoot us an email to podcast@gasbuddy.com. We'd love to hear from you. Interact with us on social. That's or leave a comment on our YouTube video. Right, Matt? We're on YouTube as well.
Yes.
Reach us at Gas Buddy. That's the channel for us on YouTube, is simply the Gas Buddy YouTube channel. So if you want to watch us there, and feel free to join us. We'd love to hear from you there. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we'd love if you give our show a review. Get the word out and share a podcast with others. But Matt, you know, I'm kind of optimistic here today. I don't know if it's the coffee, if it's the caffeine, or the fact that I've got a little time off coming up. But, you know, I just wrote a blog here this morning talking about the potential for some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about that. Now, the last podcast that we had, Iran had launched an attack against Israel. Israel had yet to respond. Since then, Israel has responded. And so you and I were messaging back and forth the moment that it was beginning to unfold, and crude oil prices were jolting higher at just the rumors of it happening as it was beginning to unfold.
Yeah.
By what, 4.5%?
Yeah, it was
at
big.
One moment?
It was. Yeah, it was like 3%, then 4%, then 4.5%. So, you know, if anything, Matt, you got to look at the behavior of the market, right? And anything, you know, because numbers and behaviors are certainly what an analyst, at least I look at. And I think the numbers, Matt, easily represented that the oil market was surprised at the tone and the retribution from Israel, right? I think, you know, you and I were talking just kind of like, wow. I can't believe Israel did this, because I had suggested in the last episode that it would be probably surprising that Israel would launch an attack. And that's the way the markets felt, too. And that's why oil prices popped at one point almost 4.5% after news that Israel had launched an attack on Iran. But the interesting thing was, and this is where a lot of people say, hey, was that impactful? Did it affect oil prices? Yes, but very briefly. Because as the night went on, Matt, we talked about, you know, what is going to happen. Will Iran retaliate? That's what we talked about specifically. And it looks like, I think in state media, Iran barely even mentioned it.
Yeah. In fact, I'm seeing some news out there that Iran is telling, you know, some American news media outlets that it will not be escalating the conflict with Israel. And so we hope that's the truth. We hope that's not a deception of any kind, where, you know, they're trying to let everybody lower their guard down. And then all of a sudden, you know, a situation, let's just see if face value. Hopefully that's where we are at. And that has crude oil basically even a tiny bit, if I'm not mistaken, cheaper
lower
than it was.
Yeah.
The last time we recorded this podcast prior to Israel, retaliating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
you know,
and yeah, and let's get into the calculus here, Matt. What was interesting is if we analyze the situation, it's really interesting in how it's progressed. So here's the thinking, right? Israel attacked Iran. The conventional wisdom would say that Iran is going to retaliate in a significant way, although it was a small but notable attack, in that Iran now has awareness of what Israel's missiles are capable of. And I think that's the message that Israel was trying to send Iran, is just kind of a warning signal, right? That Israel chose a relatively mundane target that basically had very low risk of civilian casualties, but Israel wanted to show Iran, we've got weaponry that can get past your systems. And I think that's why Iran is playing down the fact that this happened, because there might be a little bit of a, oh boy moment here happening. So, you know, and I think that's why the market's reacting now with oil prices falling, because Israel's essentially, I wouldn't say poking the bear, but they're sending a message of, hey, be careful. This is what our systems are capable of. And Iran is heeding the message. All in all, the situation is now in process of de-escalating. And to your point, Matt, oil is trading lower than where it was even, I think, a week and a half ago. It's down
Isn't
about 50 cents a barrel.
I mean, I'll take every penny we can get, right? But I mean, to me, I'm just like, isn't that crazy? I will say that the Iranian foreign minister, forgive me if I'm mispronouncing this last name, Hossein Amirabaladehan, saying, as long as there is no new adventurism by Israel against our interests, then we are not going to have any new reactions. And that is a quote by Amirabaladehan. So that is... Again, if that is at face value and really is exactly what happens, then one would think it would kind of calm the markets down, just like we're seeing right now. Everything's just kind of, you know, copacetic. Everything's just kind of there, and here we are.
Yeah, and to your point, too, remember that after Iran's wave of 300 drones and missiles, remember that Iran also was pretty definitive in saying, this is our response. So I think that lends credibility to them saying, okay, you know, they want to send a clear message, a message that cannot be misinterpreted, right? And I think that's what they're doing here. So all in all, you know, oil prices, I've been asked this a lot lately. You know, there have been increases, Matt. By the way, the East Coast, we talked about this changeover to summer gasoline. Those folks in the East Coast, specifically the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, have seen prices absolutely jump. To put it into context here, over the last week, some of the biggest increases have been in those areas where we warned that a big jump was coming. I think we said 20 to 40 or 50 cents. Mm-hmm. And just to highlight that, by the way, New Jersey up 22 cents from a week ago. New Hampshire up 20 cents. Rhode Island 20 cents. Vermont up 17 cents. Massachusetts up 16 cents. Connecticut up 16 cents, Maine up 15 cents, New York up 15 cents, Delaware up 13 cents. They lead the nation. Those are the top 10 increases are basically all on the Mid-Atlantic and East Coast, because 90 to 95% of the reason for those increases is seasonal. The switch over to summer gasoline is now done. And back to what I was saying, Matt, a lot of reporters have been saying, is this Israel-Iran? No, it really is not. You can't eliminate maybe 5 or 10% of what happened in some of these areas may have, you know, some impact from Israel and Iran. But the bulk majority of the biggest weekly increases has not to do with Israel and Iran, but the switch over to summer gasoline. So just to put it in context, what's happening in the Middle East has had virtually negligible impact on gas prices. And for now, at least, as we mentioned, oil's back down. It probably won't.
I have one question for you in relation to this, because even, you know, locally, I'm looking at gas prices. I know during the last podcast, I had seen quite a spread, as I think as high as like $3.59 a gallon and as low as like $3.29 or $3.19 a gallon. I'm trying to remember what I said, you know, during the last podcast, but somewhere in that neighborhood. Now I can't find that $3.59 anymore. But I'm also, you know, noticing that the prices, at least over the past month or so, have really jumped around a bit. Sometimes they've gone up, sometimes they've gone down, but they've really jumped around seemingly more than I can remember in past springs. Do you think that is because of a lot of what has taken place globally, geopolitical, Israel, Iran, and other aspects, or is there something else at play there?
Yeah, you know, I would say that the bulk of what we've been seeing here, Matt, has been completely predictable, and we've had very little impact from what's happening in the Middle East, whether it was Israel-Iran or Israel and Hamas or the Houthis in the Red Sea. There's been very little disruption there. Which is kind of interesting in a way because, you know, oil hates turmoil. And traditionally, any turmoil, whether it's, you know, Israel, Hamas, the Houthis, Iran, has really pushed prices up. But I think the market is vastly concerned with, you know, potential for overproduction and the state of the economy. Keep in mind, the economy is gaining momentum. But, you know, previously, if you would have listened to a podcast from earlier this year, we were talking about the potential for, what, 3 Federal Reserve interest rate cuts? And yep. now we might not even get 1 or 2. So basically, that kind of throws cold water on oil prices potentially rallying a whole lot. Because, you know, if they do further raise interest rates, it may further cool the economy, which would cool global oil demand. So, you know, everything we've seen this spring so far, I'd like to say it's been eventful, but it's really been right to a T with what we expected from, you know, when we went back. If you'd listened to our podcast that we announced our 2024 fuel price
back in
outlook.
January.
Yeah. I'll think all the way back to January. Now we're talking about Memorial Day, just a couple of weeks away.
Oh, goodness. Yes.
What we expected, by the way, the national average, let's do a quick report card or a time and temperature check or time and gas price check, I suppose, is that the national average now at 364. That's right in our range of possible from our forecast that we announced back in January. We had expected April's range for the national average to be between 337 to 367. So we're on the high side of things.
But it's still within your predicted margin.
Right. And so where we're going with that is May, the bottom goes up and the top goes up. So May, we projected the national average would range between from 344 to 389. I don't think we're going to get to the high side of that. I think April, we're kind of on the high side of that now, but I think in May, we're going to swing back to the middle or maybe even the lower portion of that projected range. So, you know, and that's what I wrote in my blog piece, Matt, is I don't have 100% confidence that we've hit the peak, but my confidence is growing that there's light at the end of the tunnel, and we may have already hit the peak. The national average last week touched 369. We're down to 364. So there's the growing potential. And by the way, that's everything we've said on this podcast, right, is that prices usually peak in April or May, and we're right in the middle of that right now.
Yeah. Now, I have had somebody verbally ask me a question, and I said if I remembered it, I would ask Patrick on the next podcast. And guess what? I remember it. It just came to me as you were talking when it comes to prices. And here is that question. This individual was wondering why gas stations of by the same ownership, in other words, like chain convenience stores and whatnot, be it a regional or national chain, can have different gas prices in the same town at their different locations. And I'm actually looking at that right now. I'm looking at several chains. Sure. Some are national here in my local area, and some are regional, maybe
That's
across
a great
five
question.
States. And I'm looking right now, and quite literally, I'm seeing a 12-cent difference between one side of town to the other from the same owner,
That's
same
a
convenience
great question.
Store.
It's pretty simple. It's because those stations probably bought on different days and paid a different price. So unlike a big screen TV where a big box store is probably spending the same price to buy it, you have to think that a price of a big screen isn't going to vary as often. The issue with that stations will have different prices at their, you know, a company-owned store a few miles apart is, number one, the timing. Because almost every single station, whether it's owned by the company or if it's not, they're paying a different price. They're filling their underground storage tanks on different days. The other thing, Matt, is competition, right? Because there may be a market dynamic that maybe the station that's pricing higher, Matt, they could be in an affluent area where either the cost of doing business may be marginally higher or the income of the people that live there may be marginally higher, right? So at the end of the day, though, it's you know, even if it's a company-owned station 5 miles apart, they're not going to set their price based on what the other company-owned stations are selling at. they're going to set their price based on what their competition across the street is pricing at.
You know, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, but I would suspect it's been like that for a very long time because whenever I was living in Tampa and I worked in South Tampa at a radio corporation there, gas prices were higher there than in other portions of Tampa. And the same area where I lived in the suburbs, the area that I live, gas prices were higher, whereas if I drove 10 minutes away, I could get 15, 20 cents a gallon less most of the time. So, yeah, I mean, that's interesting.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and the thing about that, Matt, is we're never going to be able to stop that, right? It's always going to vary. And sometimes with what stations and what I call personalized pricing now, where people can get lower prices based on, you know, whether some stations are offering deeper discounts. For example, if you use the Gas Buddy app, we have what you call deal alerts in there. And when there's a bunch of competition in the same area, like there's three big box competitors all next to each other. If you go on the Gas Buddy app, some of those stations might be offering a lower price to you, right? Based on the fact that they know they're next to a lot of competition. So this is the urgency. This is why we always push shop around. The people that listen to this podcast are smart enough to shop around. Hopefully they will tell their friends, this is why you shop around, because we're never going to be able to defeat and have the same price, right? But you always need to check the Gas Buddy app before you fill up. Because to your point, even when I was in South Tampa, by the way, I'm back home in Chicago now, not quite as warm, but to your point, the cheapest prices in South Tampa would be at one station one day. At the next day, they'd be at a different station. So it changes. And sometimes the neighborhood that you might have seen is very expensive. There are possible days that the expensive stations all of a sudden get really cheap and then they shoot right back up. So you just never know where the cheap gas is going to be. And instead of playing whack-a-mole by driving around, that's why I check the Gas Buddy app every time before I fill up.
Yeah, and so there really can easily be a lot of good deals there as well. And then, of course, you've also got the honorable plug here, the shameless mention of the Gas Buddy card that attaches to your debit card or your bank account, actually. And you get some even additional perks. Go ahead and throw in that information as well while we're talking about it.
Yeah, I mean,
I use it too.
I do use the Pay with Gas Buddy card. And looking at my app right now, there's stations that have deal alerts. I could save 10 cents, 10 cents, 10 cents. And if you don't have the Pay with Gas Buddy card, as Matt said, it does link to your checking account and offers you deal alerts. If you go in the Gas Buddy app, you can see all sorts of discounts, which are exclusive to people who have the Pay with Gas Buddy card. And you can save, I think, 2 or 3 cents on every gallon. But most times, Matt, you go in the app and you'll see stations that are offering you 10 cents a gallon off or more. So, and there's even the premium Pay with Gas Buddy card, which is what I have, which guarantees you at least 20 cents a gallon off. Anyway, check it all out, pay.gasbuddy.com, if you want more information on the Pay with Gas Buddy card. But I love it. It's the only card I use to fill up with now.
Yeah, I have to say I'm kind of partial to it as well. So I thoroughly enjoy, you know, saving money regardless because I go through so much fuel. It just kind of is what it is. So that's certainly good to keep in mind. I'm glad to know that that's probably, you know, that that's actually what it is. You know, the gas stations are just purchasing, or the company itself that owns maybe those locations are purchasing on different days and sending it to different locations, and that would be why there's a disparity in the price. Because I honestly didn't have an answer. I'm like, you know, it's an excellent question. I honestly don't know, you know, why that is the case. If I think about it during the podcast, I'll ask Patrick, and I'm certain he will have an answer for it. And you know, here we are. You did. I swear we need to put you on Jeopardy. I don't know. It's kind of entertaining at times. I guess as long as all the questions are about oil and gas prices, you stand to win. So let's talk about a couple of other things here. I am like you have been right all along when it comes to, for example, other geopolitical issues, Russia, Ukraine, and other aspects. There is one thing that Russia has been saying now for several days that is a little bit of a concern. I don't know if it's the bear that's kind of, you know, rattling the cage, so to speak, and there's nothing really serious behind it, or if the world should take them seriously. But right now, you know, Russia is warning the world that the world is on the brink of a direct military clash between nuclear powers and other aspects.
Ironic coming from Russia.
It is very ironic coming from Russia. But the next question mark that I would have is, so far geopolitically, the Ukraine and Russian situation hasn't had a whole lot of a direct impact on prices. If I remember correctly, like as soon as the thing broke out between Ukraine and Russia, it had a temporary impact, but that's been long ago. Could this create problems for crude oil if there is a direct military clash between nuclear powers?
Well, sure. You know, that's worrisome. But I think Russia, you know, if you read the story and you read the comments from that, they are just poking the bear. I feel like, you know, they're and again, how ironic that a warning about nuclear warfare coming from Russia, who invaded Ukraine. I just have to be like, well, I'll take that with a huge grain of salt. But I mean, of course, I mean, if there is some sort of major threat, I mean, the what is it? The nuclear clock has been, what, 1 or 2 seconds towards midnight for the last year or two. So yeah,
it has.
We're in this elevated awareness period where there's a lot of rhetoric going around. There seems to be this, what did President Bush say? Axis of evil.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have China, Russia,
Iran,
other countries. Yeah. Lining up on the other side. So, you know, sure. The potential is there because, I mean, I wouldn't really worry too much about the U.S. I'm a little biased, but there's one country in that axis that, number one, has invaded a sovereign country. There's another country on the other side that is preparing and building the world's largest potential military. Where do we think the risk is coming from?
It's a great point. That is a great point.
So, I mean, to your point, yeah, I mean, China has been confrontational in the South Asian Sea, right? There's a lot of disputes with some of the islands in the South China Sea, and China's provoking things, and they're going around building artificial reefs. Exactly. So, you know, I think it's just a little ironic that warning is coming from Russia directed at the West. But of course, you know, their propaganda, anti-West propaganda, is flying in Russia as it is in China. The other interesting development too, Matt, over the weekend was I was reading a story, I think it was in the Journal, about China's equivalent of the CIA and the FBI. Mm-hmm. I think it was called the Ministry of State Security. And basically the Ministry of State Security in China is basically starting to litter a lot of anti-Western propaganda that spies are among themselves. So sure, I think Russia is correct. I think they're completely wrong in who they blame for that. But I think there is an increased risk here in the years ahead.
And so, you know, that could have a very interesting and unique reaction, I would think, to the crude oil prices, depending upon, you know, where, I suppose, that could potentially happen. Because, you know, or maybe not. Maybe
yeah.
just,
well,
maybe you just get superpowers suddenly starting to get into direct military clashes, and it doesn't matter where it's at on the world, it's going to create a ripple effect. I mean, you tell me.
If we look at the calculus here, the countries that we mentioned, China, they're starting to produce more crude oil. They also have about as much refining capacity as the U.S., which is something to keep an eye on, right? Because we're talking about the balances of supply and demand. China has a lot of refining capacity. Russia has a lot of oil production capacity. Iran's got a bit of oil production capacity. So, yeah, I mean, between these three countries, you know, that there is a lot of impact to potentially supply and or demand in one way or another.
Certainly something to keep a very watchful eye on. No question about it. And you know, to look at all of that and, you know, keep the finger on the pulse, so to speak, because there's a lot of things that, as we have found out with Iran and Israel, that, you know, you and I and anyone listening for decades have been, you know, talking about the concern between Iran. I mean, literally decades. We were children and this was an issue.
This is nothing new. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. But it is. But the new part is it was the very first time that proxies were not used. Instead, it was a direct, we're going to name it and claim it, situation between the two that had ever happened, which really made all of us go, uh-oh, you know, I mean, for real. I mean, because we had all been told this for decades, that there could be a very serious, and I'm not saying that a serious issue can't happen in the future, You know, we don't know how all this will eventually settle down, you know, into the future per se. But for right now, no one on either side seems to be interested in escalating the situation dramatically at this particular point between Iran and Israel. Israel also has its hands full with what's going on in Gaza as well, regarding Hamas and other aspects. So, I mean, they are dealing with a lot, understandably. So, I mean, there's just a lot there, obviously. So prices at this particular point, like I said, I'm seeing locally here in my region across multiple states. I was in, you know, Tennessee earlier, less than a week ago, and prices were about a nickel different from what I'm, you know, paying here. But I've just seen a little bit of a fluctuation back and forth. But for, yeah, for a little bit, I'm more or less seeing prices maybe about a nickel or a dime cheaper per gallon on average than maybe what I saw a week ago at this time. But you tell me where we're headed and all of that. I mean, what's going on?
No,
with
I
all
did. You know, to your point, I think for the first time in a little while here, Matt, the West Coast had been hit with some pretty big price increases, right? I'll remind folks that, yes, California has had a lot of refinery maintenance. The West Coast has gotten hit hard over the last few weeks. In fact, California is up over 10% compared to what they were spending a year ago. California statewide average up 55 cents a gallon from a year ago.
Wow.
I've got some good news, though. So the West Coast has been hit hard. We just talked about the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast states being hit hard. I think, Matt, that very soon, whether it's this week or next, I think all these areas are going to see some level of relief. Now, California may take a little longer because they do have a couple major refineries undergoing maintenance for another couple of weeks. But, you know, Matt, I don't know if I often feel this optimistic, but I mean, summer's upon us. It's late April. And we're getting really close to the peak in prices if we haven't hit it already. So I guess motorists can rejoice is that I think there's some light at the end of the tunnel. We're not 100% out of the woods just yet. But I am hopeful that relief will start here soon because everyone now, Matt, everyone is on summer gasoline. The transition is done. It's over. And of the three things we say why prices go up every spring, it's refinery maintenance, it's demand, and it's summer gasoline. Summer gasoline is now behind us, so that's not one of the factors. And refinery maintenance should be wrapping up here in the next couple of weeks. And once it's done, that's another factor that pushed prices up that will no longer be contributing. That only leaves the increase in demand as the only factor that pushes prices up potentially. And demand really doesn't really, you know, demand starts heating up in the summer, Memorial Day, more so in the summer. So keep in mind, of the three factors that pushed prices up, in the next few weeks, we're only going to have one of those left, which is rising demand. So that should help derail the freight train and could start to help accelerate some potential measure of relief. And going back to our forecast, by the way, that means that prices for most Americans will be in the mid $3 range for most of the summer.
I know that we're probably not too far away from wrapping up this particular podcast, but I do have one follow-up question to ask you regarding all of this, and that is in regard to the Federal Reserve. You know, at the beginning of this year, there was a lot of thought processes that, you know, sometime during the summer, the Federal Reserve may start lowering interest rates at least once or twice. Now that may not probably happen. If interest rates, and I'd even seen a few outlier stories thinking that the Federal Reserve may have to actually go up another quarter of a percentage point to try to tame inflation. Actually, I won't even say outlier. I mean, honestly, I've seen several news stories that would seem to be wondering if that's what's going to happen. Role-playing just a little bit here, if interest rates stay the same or even go up a little bit, do you see the price point of gasoline being impacted by that?
Probably not a whole lot. Again, because gas and oil prices don't react so much to interest rates. Sometimes oil is used as a hedge against inflation. And if the Fed starts cutting rates, it may, you know, I don't think it's going to drive economic growth that much. I think we're going to stay higher for a little longer. Boy, I was almost thinking the Fed may raise one more time, maybe 25 basis points. And then they'll let it sit there. And then maybe early in 2025, they'd start the, or late 2024, maybe they'd reverse that final cut. So no, I don't think the interest rate potential decrease would have a major impact on prices. I think the market is pretty supplied, pretty decently supplied. I think demand is a little lackluster. But there's also the potential, Matt, that keep in mind, OPEC's production cuts right now have been extended through the end of the second quarter. So that's the end of June. There is the potential that OPEC is going to eventually raise output again. So that's sitting on the radar as potential. As long as oil prices remain balanced, I think OPEC may start slowly increasing output, which would help actually put downward pressure on prices a little bit more towards the end of the summer. But we'll have to see. And by the way, you mentioned reserve. I think you mentioned reserve. I was almost thinking you were going to talk about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which,
well, that was
by
going
the way,
to be my
is
next
up.
Question, actually. So there you go.
Beautiful. The nation's strategic reserve. The government has temporarily halted buybacks. Keep in mind, because oil prices are outside of the range, they're too high. But I'm looking at the data since the start of the year. I get this question a lot. Since the start of the year, the strategic reserve is up about 10 million barrels. And if you compare it, the lowest we saw the nation's strategic reserve was last July. It sat at about 346 million barrels. It's now at about 365 million barrels. So it's up almost 20 million barrels from its low. So we're going the right direction.
And that, I would think, helps provide some stability as well to some degree. Or at least psychologically a little bit of stability in the mindset, mm-hmm. saying, hey, if there's a major situation, we've got this to fall back on for a little while.
I've got so many people that think the strategic reserve is empty. I don't know if they're just joking around. And yeah, I mean, that's the political talking point, is that the SPR was drained. But, you know, there's another story, and I think it was... I kind of fell for it at first. Joe Podesta, who is part of the Biden administration, had suggested that the Biden administration is going to, you know, look at potentially keeping the price of oil low or gas prices low. And I fell for it. And somebody said that, you know, they used an indirect statement. They believed that they were saying the Biden administration was going to drain the SPR. I really hope the Biden administration does not use the SPR for price reduction. I know a lot of Americans, myself included, don't like gas prices where they are. I'm sure you'd agree.
Yeah.
I think it would be an epic miscalculation.
How much could they actually lower it? How much could they actually lower the price by tapping the reserve yet again?
Not a whole lot. I mean, they'd probably have to use a lot of the reserve to do much to drive oil prices down. Because keep in mind, OPEC is producing. I mean, if we let 100 million barrels go, it's not going to do much to lower global oil prices, maybe a $3 or $5 reduction, which if there's a refinery outage, you know, $3 or $5 a barrel is not much, Matt. I mean, for every dollar that oil prices drop, you're saving 2.3 cents a gallon, roughly.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about a big amount.
So do we have any oil production capacity left in America? Can we raise our production, or are we pretty much at the max of what our capacity is to do?
Well, I mean, U.S. producers, they don't really have production quotas. So, I mean, U.S. oil producers respond to oil prices being higher or lower. We are slightly below the record levels, but we're still the world's largest oil producer, churning out about 13 million barrels a day. So, yeah, if President Biden were to say, hey, thumbs up, let's open up more areas to drilling, that wouldn't necessarily move the needle because there may not be oil in those areas. But the Biden administration could absolutely take a more friendly, you know, stance and make it easier for oil companies to produce oil rather than make it more difficult. And we'll just end it there. I mean, the Biden administration, I think everyone can agree, has made it more difficult for oil companies to produce oil. It has not stopped them from producing oil. But in the next few years, those policies will have had an impact on the prevailing price of oil. And I know everyone likes to say, that the show is biased one way. But no, we're not afraid to say the Biden administration has clearly, you know, been anti-fossil fuels. But I guess, you know, let's end it with some light at the end of the tunnel, Matt. Is, like I said, hopefully gas price decreases are coming in the weeks ahead. You'll be talking about, keep an eye on those prices in Kentucky. Hopefully they'll drift down by next week. I'm hopeful that my prices will drift down, too.
Kentucky, Illinois, Tennessee, Missouri. I try to keep a watchful eye on basically all of those different areas because I'm in
You're
all of those.
You're a true things. Gas buddy, and you report them all to the Gas Buddy app, right?
every opportunity that I get, yes, I do, actually. So, but sometimes I'm still driving down the road, and, you know, safety first. But, yes, I do. Well, I tell you what, Patrick, thanks, and obviously your area of expertise, we really appreciate it. Sometimes I pick on you during the podcast, but
always great to be with you, Matt. There's no such thing as picking on me. Come on. That's what we're all here for, right?
Well, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. All right. I'll take the kind comments back. All right. There we go. Over a Barrel. That's going to wrap everything up for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. And if all else fails and you aren't sure where to listen to this podcast, you can always go to gasbuddy.com and just literally click on the blog and podcast tab. And there we are. Make sure you just give us a listen. And thanks so much for being here. And we'll talk again coming up really soon.